We all know the pit of mediocrity, that sinking feeling of settling for less, of being apathetic. But is there a way to get out of that? Is that even possible? Let's see what the Bible says about that.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. I'm glad you're here for this one. If you're watching on YouTube, you can go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can like this video, comment your thoughts below. I'm glad you're here for this. And my brother-in-law, Jackson Glenn, is on the podcast today with us, so I'm super excited.
Awesome. It's good to have Jackson back.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
About a year ago.
Yeah, good to be at this table again, probably about a year. But yeah, I'm excited to be here and looking forward to talking to you guys.
Yeah, so last time we talked about a similar or related topic, I guess, of don't give up now. I'm in the valley of waiting.
Yeah.
It came out of some real places in your own life. And so today, a topic as well that it fits everybody, but it's one that you wrestle with, as we all do, but in a very unique place related to your career, which we all do. We're going to talk about life as well. It's a subject of mediocrity. How do you pull yourself out of the place of just settling? Because that's a real thing. So before we get into that, Jackson, give us a little update on kind of where you are, all things life and career, just so everybody knows who you are, connection at the table. Truett's already made some of that here for us. So tell us about yourself and life these days.
Yeah. So just to begin, obviously I'm, you know, Truett's brother-in-law, and before that we go way back, you know, regardless. So even if he wasn't my brother-in-law, I'd probably still be on this podcast.
There you go.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Probably one of my best friends before that. But, yeah, I think, you know, when we talked last, just about a year ago, you know, we talked about being in the valley of waiting. And probably that podcast rings true more now than it did a year ago.
Wow.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, life looks a little bit different now for me. I'm still, you know, pursuing a baseball career, and my wife and I are still just pursuing the minor leagues, and we're enjoying life. We love getting to do what we do, and we have included a almost 11-month-old girl in that process, which has made it slightly more difficult. But we, you know, we are really just holding tight and true to that. Just that family really matters. And these are the moments that we are going to look back when baseball's done and everything kind of settles down. We're going to really miss it. So that's kind of what we're going through right now. And we're, you know, we're just still, I'm working hard, and my wife is doing a great job supporting me and supporting our little girl. And we're just loving life. So
great. Will they be at mini games?
They will. So Reeves, my daughter, has already been, Brian, I'm assuming, to more baseball games than you probably ever have.
That's true.
I don't know much how many games you've been to. I know you're a Ranger fan.
But I
would venture to guess Reeves has been to more baseball games than the average individual.
Because in a season you have like 140.
Yeah. So we're looking at probably 145 to 150 games this upcoming season. So Reeves was probably at over half, if not three quarters of those.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
And she's not even a year.
No, she's not. She
Shout out to her. Mega fan.
Wow, that's awesome. So that may be more than I'll attend in my lifetime.
Could be.
I mean, I went to a lot back in the day when Truett was playing in high school, but
boy, that's different.
Not much since then. So
it's good.
Cool. All right. So mediocrity, it's a subject that I think everybody can relate to. As we talk, I think more people will find, I'm there. It's the kind of thing that nobody really wants to find themselves in, but you often find yourself there, and boy, it's tough to get out of. It takes real work. So some other words I think that I think we can all relate with when you think of mediocrity, think of complacency or average, settling for average, maybe not hot, not cold, somewhere in the middle. Mediocre is another word, just run of the mill, commonplace, undistinguished, not nothing unique, nothing special. And it's a place we all can find ourselves sometime, and in every part of life. We're going to talk about career and faith and even marriage and just personal disciplines as well today. But there's a character quality that's a good quality that Christians understand. In fact, they know we're called to this, that's very similar. So I wanted to separate these today before we get going very far. And it's the quality of contentment, because that is a quality we're called to. We're called to be content in all things. But how do you separate being content with being just mediocre? How do you know when there's a place to just be content with what you have and there's a place to move on? You need to get out of this spot. That's a difficult spot.
Yeah.
So what's the separator of the two there?
I mean, I think mediocre is more passive, where contentment is an active, like I'm choosing to be content. Mm. I'm choosing, in spite of my circumstances, I'm choosing to be at peace with what's going on. Whereas mediocre seems to be more the passive, like, oh, what do you know? I'm not really much. I'm not really little. I just kind of am.
Yeah.
And I just, this is just how life is. And it's just, you're not trying to be mediocre. You just are. So I think that's one aspect that's different, is passive versus like a active, willful choice of being content. Because you can be great and content, and you can be not great and content at the same time. So that's my thoughts.
No, I think that's spot on. I mean, I think we have a choice regardless of anything that we want to do, anything that we want to be. We have a choice. I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, we can choose to not be mediocre. And in the way my wife and I put it, and we've talked about it, we've made the decision that we are going to be content, but we're not going to be complacent.
There you go.
And so that, that's kind of another term that's you know, we can use too, is complacency.
Yes.
You know, but we're going to choose to be content, but we're not going to be complacent. And I've heard it put, and we'll get into this more, but I've also heard it put, you know, we're going to trust God because it depends on him, but I'm going to work as if it does not depend on me, but I'm going to work as if it does.
So absolutely.
There's a little one-liner for you.
Yeah. It's a good one. I've referred to that one a lot.
Yeah.
I repeat that a lot.
Yeah.
I think contentment has this place of I'm here by faith, but I'm also, I can be aggressively moving forward at the same time. I'm content where I am, but I'm not stuck where I am.
Yeah.
So I love all that. I think that's a good separator for us. Contentment puts me in a place, but I'm still pursuing Christ in it. I'm still pursuing everything he's called me to. Mm-hmm. Whereas complacency, you almost get there by defeatism. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, ugh. And there's no motivation. You just, it's actually there and downward instead of there and forward.
Yeah,
so, definitely.
So I think we can all agree that there is a natural pull. It's almost kind of like you're in a stream and you're facing upstream and it's coming at you. And there's a pull toward just mediocrity. And that, man, it's from different sources. Some of it comes from our own mind sometimes. Mm-hmm. Honestly, you know, it's inside our own thoughts. So, Jackson, is that real for you in career especially, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably the most challenging thing that I have experienced about my own career. I haven't experienced the workforce or any other job other than playing baseball. Mm-hmm. And so, but I know that can be true to a lot of other people as well. Mm-hmm. When literally everything feels like an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. And it, like you're saying, like literally it's an uphill battle, but there's also this roaring waterfall / stream that's pouring down on your face.
Yes.
And you're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What in the world? Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've been really battling, that I've probably battled the, you know, this whole last year is, what's next? Mm. You know, like how in the world am I supposed to keep going? How in the world am I supposed to continue to pursue excellence?
Right.
When it literally just feels like there's no way moving forward. And sometimes it feels like, and sometimes you fall into the trap of, okay, like I'm just going to fall.
Yeah.
You know?
So just for context, for people who may not know, you're in baseball and the goal is a major league field spot, right?
Yes,
that's
correct.
The goal.
Yeah.
But you're in minor league team, and there's a series of minor league teams, right? So maybe just a little bit of context explanation for folks, just so they know.
So when I played in college, I played really well at Dallas Baptist, and I got drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And as soon as you get into, I've had all these questions before, you know, I get drafted, and then people are like, oh my goodness.
You're a bazillionaire, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're a bazillionaire who plays 162 games for the Pittsburgh Pirates in Pittsburgh.
So you play now for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I wish.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you start off in what we call rookie ball, and then you go to low A, and then you go to high A, and then there's double A, and then there's triple A, and then now there's the big leagues. So, you know, depending on how much money you were given, you can progress
right
faster than some other guys. But you, no matter what, how regardless of how much money you've been given, whatever, you got to play well.
Yeah.
And so, and that's the uphill battle that we face so often is continuing to take steps forward in the organization. And then you have to reset and just play well,
Yeah. Play well. It's all about performance.
It's everything's about performance.
And this is 6 games a week.
Yes.
Ooh. And this is for how many weeks in a row?
Yeah. Like, so 6 games a week for, 5 to 6 months. So it's it's a challenge, but it's great.
Yeah.
So, I love getting to play.
Yeah.
But we're in double A right now. Okay. So we've made some good progress and we're very thankful for where we're at and how the Lord has used, just a lot of different people, used myself and my wife to get us to this point now.
Right.
But there's still an uphill battle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're pushing.
Add to that in baseball, I mean, you're looking at an average of like 250 or 300 is a great thing, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It's not like, hey, I'm going to hit every time I get up.
Yeah.
I'm going to score every time I go out.
Yeah.
It's not how it works. Right.
So, to your point, I would say 300 is Hall of Fame numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally.
So if I can succeed 3 out of 10 times, which most people would be getting fired for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I can succeed 3 out of 10 times, ooh, I'm in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Best ever.
We'll just put it this way. I'm not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
We're fighting and we're battling. So.
Yeah. And then it's every day. Yeah. And then sometimes games are great and sometimes not so good.
Yeah.
So this is where the battle comes from, I'm sure, in your head.
Because
you have a game or two or three that don't go so well.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden that water's just raging against you, right?
Yeah.
That's where you feel
absolutely. That. Yeah. It's I know that it can be, people can be watching this and thinking, oh, that's a different struggle. And I certainly do, recognize that it is different than what a lot of people go through.
Sure.
But I feel like the Lord has really called me to this. And I think this is just kind of a great segue into just kind of how this fits into my spiritual walk with the Lord. Is it's, my wife and I, we don't just do this because I love baseball. We do it because it's an act of faith for us.
Nice.
And so this topic, all this type of stuff about mediocrity and just becoming better, it really hits home for me. And it's something that I want to grow in, more and more.
Yeah. So. Well, just to keep the playing field maybe a little level here, let's go to Truett for just a minute. Truett, it's a completely different career field, ministry.
Yes.
I know this career field as well. Mm-hmm. Is there a pull toward mediocrity for you?
100%. I mean, yes, absolutely. And I think, again, like we've been saying, yes, in every career you can experience this, kind of stuff. But specifically for me in my also specific area of not just ministry, but in the youth ministry, you have every single reason to not try harder. Hey, they're just teens. hey, they're not going to listen anyway. Hey, it's
just
too hard.
Ministry.
It's just ministry. It's just youth. It's just one night a week. It's just some teenagers that aren't there for you to listen and grow in faith and all this kind of stuff. And so it's like, if I were to just be like, hey, you know what? You're right. I could literally nail it in every week and just be like, I'm going to preach the same sermon every week.
Yep.
They're not going to listen. I'll hope for the best. And who gives a rip? And maybe if people figure it out, they figure it out and all this kind of stuff. And like, that would be the easiest thing to do. But that's like the worst mentality to have at the same time.
That's true.
It's like total, like, I'm not trying hard. Maybe if they decide to pay attention, then that's cool. But instead, I have to fight the uphill battle of like, if these kids can learn algebra and calculus and learn history and participate in sports and work hard and do all these kinds of things that teenagers do, they can also apply themselves enough to sit and listen to a 30-minute sermon.
Yep.
That has the power to shift their mind on whatever topic and to encourage them in their life and to grow in their faith.
Yep.
And that's a challenge because the other factor in this is like the last people to come up to you and compliment you on something that's going to be like a personal matter is going to be a teenager, especially a teenage guy. Those people are not going to come up to you and say, you know what? That sermon just hit home with me. Yeah. Like right after they're going to come up and be like, hey, did you see the latest memes? And you're like, did you listen to the sermon at all? You know, like that's most often what happens. And so you got to have the mental strength that says like, I'm fighting against the pull for mediocrity, the pull that would say, hey, pal, just give it up.
Yep.
It's not worth it.
Yep.
These people have been in your youth for so long and they have never cared and they're not going to care. And it's like, you know, it's like all those things of like, hey, don't try as hard as you're trying, you know? And it can be easy to be like, wow, maybe I shouldn't try that hard. And then you go for a little bit and you're like, no, this is the worst. Because now I'm totally unsettled at also what I'm doing, you know? And I know that I'm not meeting these students where they're at and all this stuff. So
that's real. It's real ministry. And that phrase, it's just, fill in the blank. Yeah. Whatever you're going to say after that, it's going to destroy you.
Yes, you know? I agree.
And it's easy in ministry. It's just Ovilla. It's just some folks that, you know, you're good friends with. It's just, it's just. Yeah. And pretty soon you're stuck. You're down in a pit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Just to go on that as well, you saying that just reminds me how many times people say just this, you know, it's like in prayers and all this kind of stuff, people pray and God, if you would just just do this. And it's like, what is that? What kind of faith is that? Yeah. And I catch myself saying that and I'm like, no, I hate that I say this because it is literally the like complacency media. Hey, it God, is. I can settle for worse than this. Mm-hmm. I really can. Like, I don't mean to bother you that much. God, if you would just speak to us tonight, it's like, what is that? You know, as I think like this level of mediocrity, like it invades so many different aspects of our life. True. I don't think we're really aware of it. So
yeah, it's true. So let's just go there then. Let's talk about some other areas besides career, because it does. It shows up in marriage, finances, parenting, physical health, all that. So where else do you feel this pull toward just?
Now we're all going to realize how many times we say just.
Exactly. Where else do you feel the pull to just?
Yeah. A little bit of transparency here. I feel it. I mean, I've been married for 2 years and boy.
Yeah.
There, you know, we talk about, you know, our jobs and all that, and how, you know, we want to just remove any type of mediocre behavior. I have never felt something. I love my wife to death, and it is just such a challenge to avoid mediocrity in a marriage. I don't. It is so hard, and I think that the enemy tries to weave himself into a marriage because it is so deep and so special and such a cool picture of what our relationship with the Lord, you know, looks like. And so I would say for me, you know, that is one of the areas that I have to actively be on guard against is avoiding mediocrity in my marriage.
Again, I think that goes back to the active versus passive thing. Like you have to actively be fighting against that rather than like the passive, complacent mediocrity.
It just makes you wonder if the temptation toward mediocrity shows up more in the things that are more routine for us. Marriage.
Yeah. It's every day. You're waking up. Guess what? Yeah. Still married.
She's there. Yeah. You can come home from work. She's going to be there.
All that
kind of thing. Or she comes home from work, whatever it is. The more routine it is, the more temptation I think there is toward that.
Yeah, exactly. Again, the super obvious ones of like Bible reading and praying and all that stuff. It's like, that can be the most like, well, I don't get much out of reading my Bible, but anyways, I got to do it. So I just could be complacent. Who cares? Just, I don't get it, but I do it.
Yeah.
That's like the worst
it's
way to live.
Just what you have to do.
Yeah, exactly. Or praying. Like, I don't ever hear God speak, but I vent to him all day long.
Yeah.
Like, boy, that's tough, you know? Yeah.
It is. And it shows up. Health goals, you know, I know health goals are attached to your career, but anytime you think, okay, I'm going to try to lose 10 pounds or I'm going to try to be more active, that it you start feeling that pull right away, just trying to keep you from doing that. Or I'm going to save some money, you know, here we go again. You feel the pull to not do all of that. So, well, let's talk about where this pull comes from, because we all experience it. It's very real. And we know that it comes, part of it comes from within, but part of it comes from the enemy, Satan himself, the deceiver, the liar, the father of lies. And he doesn't want us to trust God. He doesn't want us to venture out. He doesn't want us to have faith goals and vision and trust God in some areas that we haven't walked in before. But man, a lot of Christians just get sucked into all of that and they just buy it. Why is that? Why is it so tempting for Christians just to buy the lie of, look, it doesn't matter. It's too big. It's not going to work. Why are Christians so tempted to be drawn into that, you think?
Yeah. I would say for me, one thing that I grew up learning from just watching other people and have to be very careful of is this idea that I'm just going to pass. Like in school, like it was when I went to DBU, well, C's get degrees.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And it's like, hey, that's true.
That's valid.
That's pretty darn
true. Yeah, exactly.
And, but as I've learned, kind of over the past few years is that God just isn't asking me to just pass.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So good.
God is actually asking me to thrive, you know, and that's, you know, that's something that if let's say I take that in my marriage and I get, you know, to where I'm old, my wife's old and I say, well, honey, man, we did it. We didn't get divorced.
Yeah.
And it's like, what in the world is that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the lowest bar possible.
Yeah. Seriously. So,
but I think that's such a plague that we kind of buy into as Christians is it's like, okay, well, we're just going to set the bar extremely low. And in my marriage, if I don't get divorced.
Yeah, that's the win. That's cream of the crop. That's a life worth living right there.
And it's like, goodness gracious.
We fought every day. We might as well have been emotionally divorced, but at least we didn't physically serve papers to one another.
Yes. And you know, marriage, parenting, all that, you know, that all comes, I think back to us trying to pass and not necessarily doing what we can to thrive.
It
comes back to the phrase just again. Well that's just the way it is. Well, that's just the way couples are. Or that's just the way marriage is. Or that's just the way kids are. That's just the way parenting is. Yeah, you just keep lowering that bar down to just nothing.
Yeah.
And you're stuck all of a sudden in that spot.
And I think it's also like, almost like you're changing the standard, like you're changing what's required of you so that you can like feel comfortable, like you're saying, well, at least I did this. So I have this, I can take glory in. And it's like, what is that?
Yeah.
You know, like you're literally lowering the bar so you can just feel better about yourself. But the standard didn't ever change actually, you know, like the call of a marriage is still for the husband and wife to love each other like Christ and the church. It's, it's not. And the goal of marriage is don't get divorced. The end, you know, like that.
Do you think it frightens some people though to have a high standard? I'm afraid to set the bar here because
fear of failure. Right. I mean, it's like the biggest thing people struggle with is like, boy, if I were to actually say that I needed to lose weight or I needed to become more active, if I actually put my mind to that, then like, what if I didn't though?
Yeah. Yes, right.
You know? And it's like, well, you just. That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's just a ridiculous thing, you know, that you've scared yourself out of doing anything then at that point, basically.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You talked yourself into mediocrity.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
worse.
Passive. Yeah, exactly. Passivity or just downward complacency.
Yeah. So there's another pull today, and it's not just from within, it's not from the enemy, but it's from the culture, which is influenced by the enemy. There's a whole... would say unspoken, but it's a loudly spoken message today. It might not be as clear, but when you hear this, you're going to realize, yes, that's definitely out there. And it is a pull to not stand out for success, strength, or motivation. It's kind of like in school, you know, C's to get degrees.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been going on for decades in just kind of school environments. Like I was that way in elementary school. And that was a long time ago, you know? And I wanted to do good. I wanted the teacher to be happy. And I instantly got labeled teacher's pet.
Wow.
And made fun of all the time. And, and people didn't want to be around me because I was teacher's pet.
It's crazy. Deal.
So it's been around.
So you're like, so now what? I'm supposed to like not care? And that makes me better?
So, but you often find, you know, there are times like, okay, well, I need to mess up or not do so well so I can be accepted by the crowd.
It's crazy.
Because if I keep doing this, they're not going to like me. That's the pull of a culture,
though.
It's
crazy.
So, but in today's culture, especially in the last decade, there seems like there's even a greater pull. Like the attention goes not to those who are successful, but to those who are the victims.
Yeah.
And the more victim status you can claim, the more attention you get. And if you're the one who is excelling, then you're seen as the problem. You know, you're the guy who does well. You're the problem. I ought to have what you have, and I shouldn't have to work so hard for it. Ooh, man. And that's a whole cultural mindset today. And I don't think that Christians have known how to deal with that.
Yeah.
Thoughts on why? Why is it that Christians instead end up almost like apologizing? Oh, I'm sorry I live in this region. I'm sorry I am this race, this skin color, this belief system, this I have this or I have this. Mm-hmm. Why is it that Christians have caved to that instead of hailing that rightly with truth?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind when you talk about those things is just like, why do we handle it the way that we handle it? And the one word that comes to my mind is just fear. Mm.
It's true.
We're scared. I mean, we've seen what people will do to those who, I mean, to, if anyone has a disagreement, it's like, I'm going to cancel you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever. I'm going to do this. And I'm going to make your life terrible. And blah, blah, blah. And it's
shame
like,
you publicly.
Yeah. You're going to get publicly shamed. Oh, man. You know,
yeah.
Well, how could I ever stand up for what's true then? You know, if, you know, and it's just complete fear. Yep. And, and I don't want to sit here and point the finger and say like, oh, you know, you're struggling
everyone
with fear. Like
there.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, exactly. You're terrible. It's like, I get it.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Because it's terrifying. And, and a lot of times I don't like, you know, I really do struggle with the fear of just a lot of different things and it can be crippling.
Yep.
So there's got to be a way. There has got to be some strength and some courage to move forward past that fear. You know, especially when we're getting fed just a bunch of lies from culture, from the enemy.
Yes.
Know? To me, it's how do we move past that fear?
Yeah, for sure. I think fear definitely is the leading edge. Response to whenever the situation is going on. And then on the back end, and you're like reasoning, you're quickly going through like, well, God was nice to people at times. Jesus saves people and he showed mercy and all this stuff. And so you're like, you're just bouncing from like, how can I not get crucified? Imagine. Mm-hmm. How can I not be shamed for what's going on? Well, Jesus showed mercy to people. Therefore, I ought to show mercy to people. And that's it.
I shouldn't offend anyone.
Yeah, exactly. Surely Jesus never offended anyone, of course, you know, and all this kind of stuff. Well, maybe not. And then the other thing that like people deal with is like the whole tolerance thing. And it's like, that's not a Christian virtue actually, but like truth and justice are rather than like, hey, just be nice and get along and all this kind of stuff. Like, I get that that seems like a nice thing to do, but is that the biblical right thing to do? You know, so.
Because what it does, it just lowers the bar again so that everybody has a low bar. Mm-hmm. You can't dare stand out. You can't dare lead.
Excel
or have success anyway, because you're the problem. You're the reason, you know, that I don't have what I should have kind of deal. So
yeah, it literally lowers everyone's desire to even try hard.
Yes.
Because it's not even rewarded. Right. In fact, if I go the opposite way, then I get rewarded for whatever reason.
Yes. All right. So we recognize that pull. You don't have to look very far in Scripture to find out that mediocrity is nowhere on the list of things that Jesus wants for us. In fact, you find just the opposite. You find parables like the parable of the talents in Matthew 25, where those who invest and those who want more are actually rewarded. And the ones who don't want or have fear and have mediocrity, they're punished.
Wow. So good.
You've got Jesus calls us to be salt that is savory and light that is seen. And again, in that context, salt that has no flavor or light that is hidden, mediocrity is discouraged. You know, so here's this pull. Even in the book of Revelation, Jesus says, I wish you were hot or cold, not in the middle, not mediocre, lukewarm. Mm-hmm. I'll spew out of my mouth. He wants us one or the other, he says. So in those and so many other references, mediocrity is seen as a negative. You know, it's not the thing you want. Then I know there's other Bible verses that point to this. I'm sure there's some that are significant to you guys. You find like Colossians 3, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, working as to the Lord, not for human masters. You get like Proverbs 22. Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will stand or serve before kings. They will not serve before obscure men. Luke 16, Jesus says, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. All of those seem to push toward, don't be mediocre. You know, mm-hmm. Press forward. Trust God. Do what he's called you to do. Work hard. Be successful. All of that is really the push. Why is it that Christians hear even some of that and just say, eh, I don't know. I'm still not going to do it. Why? Why is that? Because it's all there.
Yeah.
That's just a sprinkling of passages.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I think one aspect is like, oh, that's hard. It's going to take a lot of work. I'd have to I would literally have to change everything I did in my life and the way that I think. Yeah. It's a little too tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the Bible elevates people like Noah, who stands out as a preacher of righteousness in his day, and he builds an ark and it stands out
a long time.
Yeah. Too. And he stands out above the crowd. Moses, who goes back into Pharaoh and confronts him.
Yeah.
Go down the line. Daniel. We just keep going with this. They're all people who stood out above the mediocre, who did something that God had called them to do.
Yeah.
But again, you find most Christians just in the place of, not for me though.
Yeah.
Thoughts on why for you, Jackson?
I think Trude hit the nail on the head. I think, I used the word plague earlier and I'm going to use it again. There is a plague.
Yes.
Among people that hard is bad.
Mm.
That
there you go.
This idea that failure is also bad.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
And it's terrible. Mm-hmm. It's legit.
It's literally destroying a society. Yeah. You could say literally.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely terrible. And you know, for people to look at just for some scripture and go, that's not for me. it's one of two things. It's like, okay, like I know that that's true, but that seems to be a little bit too hard for me to accomplish right now. Or it's just complete fear of, you know what, like that is true. But I'm going to just say no because I'm afraid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
And so true. I think you hit the nail on the head. Mm. Like it's either fear or it's just the fact that it's just too hard and you're scared of something being hard.
Add into that. It's uncomfortable, especially like for me, even I read some of these and I'm like, whenever I have said, not for me. And I'm like, dang it. That literally is just pride. Yeah. It is literally pride going, my comfort actually is more important than what God wants me to do. Yeah. What's easy to me, what I can reckon in my head to what I think, like, no, this is how I ought to live my life. Let me lean on my own understanding for a second and all this stuff. You know, whenever you're doing that, it's like, that's literally just pride saying like, hey, it's my way, not your way, God. Yeah. Even though it comes in the way of not choosing, in the way of not taking the steps, you're still deciding, you know? So that's...
Yeah, it is almost as though Christians, and I can put myself in the category as well, we all probably can do this, as though I'm reading scripture and I'm hearing God, but I've got this filter, and the filter is going to filter out anything that's going to cause discomfort, be difficult, could cost me financially, could cost me relational, status with people, in any way. And I'll filter all those things out. And then if there's something left that's easy and it's attainable and doable without much pain, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, imagine again, you go to a gym and you're like, now I will do anything in here that's not going to cost me pain. You're going to look around and go, that water machine looks real nice. Now get me some water and walk out of here.
Yeah.
It's like people literally fear pain and they fear something, doing something hard, fearing failure and all this stuff. Being like, but if I were to do that, my identity would be less. You know, my worth as a human being would be less, because if I failed, I would, I don't know what would even happen in my life. Yeah. You know, I couldn't live with myself or whatever.
Yeah.
I've got this before we get into more scripture, I've got this thing on my phone that has to remind me, because so just in more transparency that I really struggle with fear and I feel it and it's crippling sometimes. Yep. Mm-hmm. I hate failing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's funny that I play baseball, because like we talked about, like it's literally a game of failure.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes how hard it can be on me.
75% failure every time you play, right?
Yes. at a good rate.
Yeah.
Like if you're batting 250 and you're in the mind, you're like, I am balling out this year. Like, for real.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to tell you the percentage of what I failed at this year. You can literally look it up online and be like, oh my gosh, that's not good. But so like I have to remind myself so often. And so I put it on my phone and I'm actually going to look at it right now.
Good. Yeah. Well, I keep bringing that up not to shame you anyway, but just to put it in perspective for folks, because most people, if you went to your job or a pursuit and you knew 90% or better of the time you were not going to do well.
You wouldn't
do it.
You would
not do that. Yeah. But here you are. You keep putting yourself back out there day after day to do that.
Well, and this is what it says is when I look at my phone, I'll have it kind of shuffle through a few different motivational texts or whatever. And the one that I love is this: the man who never makes mistakes is the man who never does anything.
Mm.
And to me, I'm just like, okay. So
yeah.
Like I'm going to continue to choose to step in and look like an idiot sometimes, to step in and look like a fool and fail. Because, at the end of the day, if I, let's say I don't make the bigs, well, I can hang my hat that, you know what? I gave it every bit.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And that failure actually made me better.
It's good.
Fires me up.
So it's good stuff.
So good.
Well, it does apply in a lot of areas of life, but it even applies specifically in the areas of our faith.
Yeah.
We're not called to just infancy in following Jesus. We're called to maturity. Hebrews talks about, hey, let's leave the discussion of the elementary things in Christ. Let's go on to perfection. Let's grow in the grace and the knowledge of our Savior Jesus Christ. So there's this push. But in my years in church, the percentage of people within a church who actually are pursuing that, who want, I want to know more, and I want to change, I want to be different, and I want to do more, that percentage is smaller, than you might think. Yeah. So why is that? Why is it that in the most crucial place Christians seem to struggle with mediocrity the most?
Yeah. I think the first thing for me that comes to mind, and you've said it a couple times, maybe we should start with this. Trude, you want to tell the people what we did in the month of January? Because I'm gonna kind of
go on into this,
say some stuff that I've learned from that.
Good.
So January 1st came around and me and Jackson had planned along with some other people to do the 30-day shred, which is in the month of January, in 30 days time, we are going to read the Bible from cover to cover, Genesis to Revelation.
Yeah.
And every day was a challenge because like day one, open it up. All right. Read Genesis 1-42.
Yeah.
There you go. The next day, read Genesis 43 to the end of Exodus. And you're like, wow. Yeah. And eventually, it's like, all right, this day it's Psalm 19-79 and then 80-148.
Yeah.
And that's two whole days in just the Psalms. And you still had a little afterwards and a little beforehand. It's like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. It's so much content, but we were like, hey, let's do this sucker. Yeah. We've always said you want to read the whole Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like imagine you can say I've read the whole Bible. And I read it in a month's time. That's crazy. So anyways.
I mean, none of us would say that that was easy. Like that was really hard.
It was a shift.
There was a total moment. I remember waking up and be like, this is scary how much I have to read today.
Yes. Yes.
Like, my wife is not going to like how much I'm going to have to read. Uh-huh. Anyway. Uh-huh. But I remember reading something and this, this goes back to you lowering the bar.
Mm.
And I remember reading something in Leviticus, but also that Peter writes about in his first book. And essentially it's God's call to us to, he's essentially telling the Israelites, quit lowering the bar.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, please stop lowering the bar. And, and the excuse, not the excuse, the evidence that he gives for us to raise the bar is he goes, I want you to be holy because I am holy.
There you go.
Yeah.
And it's like, I literally remember reading that and then reading it again in the New Testament and it still applies today.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Is our goal is not to just get by. It's not just to pass.
Yes.
It is to be holy.
Yes.
Because God himself is holy.
Yes.
And it's just good. Like, I mean, it gives me the freaking goosebumps when I just talk about it. But like, I mean, it's talk about a bar that you can't raise anymore and you're going to get Like you're in trouble if you try to lower that bar.
Yes.
Like our goal is to glorify God, and that's to display every single bit of his attributes so that it's actually attractive to other people.
Yeah. And you go, be holy. That sounds so hard though. And it's like,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
I might fail at that.
Yeah.
You will.
You probably will.
And guess
will.
What? Yeah. I'm going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the call. You don't get to say, let's lower that down to like be fine 3 out of 7 days of the week.
And
then we'll rock with it. You know, it's like, no, that's not the call, you know? And so that's so good, dude.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. And just for clarity's sake, we're not talking about a legalistic standard so we can try to earn our salvation. That's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Be perfect so that God might love you.
Yeah.
No.
It's not the call.
But because he has, now you have the ability and the power and the call to be like him.
Yep. Yeah. Walk and in holiness.
We can.
Yeah. It's so good.
It's good.
Love it.
All right. So it's obvious then that we are not called to mediocrity. That we are called to passionately follow the Lord, to love him with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And there's nothing left over in that. There's no low bar in that. But let's talk about now, how do you do that? I think we've established the need for it. But let's get down to reality of how we do that. I know there's some places,
specifically in our spiritual life, not just like...
Well, let's talk about it in every part of life. The principles are going to cross over because, again, it's not easy. It's not natural. You don't naturally mature in your faith.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't naturally gain muscle mass.
Yeah,
exactly. You don't naturally lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
You don't naturally become more knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
The tide is going in the other direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there have to be steps that we take to avoid the pull. I'm just curious, what are some tangible ways that you do that in your life in general? It could be areas of faith. Let's start there, in fact, because we'll get to marriage and some other areas, but how do you avoid that in your own life?
Yeah. I think to make most sense in my mind, when I hear you say that, I hear the word entropy.
Nice. I like it.
Which entropy would be, everything starts off as something that's pretty good, but over time, if it's not taken care of, you know, you can go down to any random building, you know, go down to the shell here in Oville. Like I once, that building probably looked great.
Yeah.
And you know, to be fair, it's still, I love the show.
Nice. Oh, sure, of course.
Just go there every day before OCS.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're not taking care of something, it will deteriorate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what's true, you know, about a building physically is true about our spiritual lives.
It's good.
And so to me, how do you fight mediocrity? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge thing, is we have the choice to fight it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
it's good.
So good.
To me, it's all about discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that can sometimes be hard to hear.
Another scary
word. Sometimes
it's
hard for me to say.
Yeah, sure.
But to me, it is all about discipline.
Yeah. Mm. Which some people, right from the rip, they hear that and they go, this dude is just talking about, you know, hard work and maybe it'll pay off. And all that sounds too hard for me. Discipline, not my style. Yeah. Give me relax.
Right.
Principles apply. Sorry to cut you
no,
off.
I think you're exactly right. And I felt that in my own heart.
Yeah.
As I said that. Yeah. I was like, oh, it hurts so much.
Yeah.
I do not like it.
Yeah.
But I think if you just look at anything in life where someone is great, someone is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, let's use you for an example. I've talked to you sometimes about how the heck do you preach twice on a Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
And
For 52 weeks.
Yeah. And it's to me, it's because you have disciplined yourself and you have trained yourself. You have trained in order to do it.
Yeah.
You don't just show up one day when you're like, oh, I want to be a pastor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start doing twice a week.
Yeah.
And that's that.
Yeah.
No, there's always, if anyone is great at something, there's always a process and there's always work put in beforehand.
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
Yeah.
For anybody. Look at anyone that's good at anything.
Yeah. Yep.
And they have trained and they have practiced. And I think the Bible affirms this too.
Oh,
when Paul writes to Timothy, he says, while physical training is of some value, he says, hey, Timothy, physical training is really good, but what's better is godliness.
It's good.
He says, because godliness is of value in every way, holding its promise for this life and the life to come.
There you go.
So it's good. Like, even good. In our walk with the Lord, we have to be disciplined. And, you know, I know that there's plenty of ways that we can discipline ourselves to grow closer to the Lord and become more godly.
Yeah, so good. Yeah. It reminds me of the verse, I believe it's in Proverbs, says, faithful are the wounds of a friend. You know, it's like, that's like what discipline is right there. It's like, whenever you have someone that's going to come alongside you and say, hey, we gotta work out. Mm-hmm. Hey, we got it. We got to.
It's true.
Not just live in mediocrity. Mm-hmm. We had a chat for the shred, and we'd every so often, hey, how are we doing in here? Are we staying up with the reading? Yeah. Are we feeling good?
Yeah.
That reading 1st and 2nd Kings and then 1st and 2nd Chronicles is very tough. How are we feeling after all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Yep.
But it's like, even though it would hurt, you know, and you're like, man, I got to do this. And all this. It's good to be disciplined, right? Because that's literally how you're going to grow.
Yeah.
So I would say going along with that, for me personally, and battling against the mediocrity stuff, especially like classic start of a new year, you're like, I'm not going to be who I will. I'm gonna be a better version of myself. And I'll say, that's great. I personally love the beginning of January, that first week of January, because everyone's fired up to be the best version of themselves ever, you know? And so like, especially that starting off with the shred and being like, all right, this no longer am I going to just say, I'll read the Bible when I can. I make sermons all the time. So like, that's my Bible reading time I get truths from there, but it's like, no, I'm setting aside a time to not just be mediocre in my faith, but to actually be like pursuing God outside of just my career that is designed around pursuing God and teaching other people to pursue God. Right. And then the other thing that I do that is similar to like discipline / accountability, but a little different. It's talking to people who genuinely care about me, talking to people who genuinely care about the youth ministry. If we're talking about mediocrity in our career and all this kind of stuff, talking to them and saying, hey, be honest with me. What needs to change around here? And I always hate saying that because I'm like, they're going to tell me some things that I don't want to hear, but it's how we're currently mediocre and how we could move to an active thing, or where maybe some areas in the ministry that we've overlooked or whatever, you know. Like, the other thing you can do is just for 1 second, you ask your wife, hey, what are some things I could do that would make you feel more, you know, important?
Yeah.
Or what are some things that I do that I just do out of routine and that actually would be showing that I care about you?
There you go.
You ask that question, then it's like, ouch, this is going to hurt.
That's right.
Because it's going to be very telling. They're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I have been mediocre in these areas, but that's literally the only way to get out of mediocrity is literally to be like, someone tell me.
Yeah.
Because if you knew, like, you could just change, but you can't just change all the time. You know, like those are some of my thoughts.
On that. So discipline,
talking to other people. Yeah.
Yeah. I think another thing for me that's helpful is, I try to hang on to those moments that when I was pursuing and was, if we're talking about faith specifically, that I am drawing close to God, that he spoke to me and I sensed real closeness with him, or real wisdom or insight came.
So good.
Holding on to that, like, yes, like I want that again.
Yeah, that's so that good. Like that reward, basically. Yes. Yeah.
It's kind of like if you work out, you know, the adrenaline rush, like, okay, I want that again.
Yeah.
You know, so spiritually, I try to hold on to those moments. That's like, so okay, man, God really rewarded when I pursued him and sought him, and I spent time in his word and I prayed and then I applied it. So I want that again.
It doesn't
mean that happens every day, because it doesn't.
So, and it'll be over a month's time, years' time.
But I know it will be there again.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that helps me
so good.
Get out of the mediocrity place, because I don't like not having that.
Yeah.
I don't like not having that closeness. I don't like not having that fresh insight. Mm-hmm. So,
That's so good. Yeah, love it.
That's good. All right. So let's reach out just a little bit further and apply that in some other areas. We talked about marriage and physical health goals. How do you make sure you don't get stuck? You've kind of alluded to this already by having those conversations with Chloe. What about other areas of life that you use these same principles to get out of the stuck spot? Because it happens. You can get there financially. You can get stuck in a bad spending pattern. You can get into a bad eating pattern. Even some bad relational patterns with other people. How do you get out of those spots.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got something?
I can roll.
Yeah.
To me, you know, I'm always going to go back to this idea of discipline. And I think something that, so let me just use this for an example. My wife and I were doing this organic foods 2025 only.
Okay.
And I was talking to Bristol and I was like, walked into Cane's Chicken. And this was like,
you said, this is naturalism.
Yeah.
This is whole. Yeah, this organic is enough. Yeah. You know?
I organically came up with the idea.
Yes, exactly. Let's rock with it.
This was, so this was back in December. So we're still going strong. We're doing really well. But I remember walking into Cane's Chicken, and this is no shot to anybody. But all I'm saying is I walked into Cane's Chicken and took a look around and said, do I want to be
I know what you're gonna say.
Like mm-hmm. the people in this room also eating Cane's Chicken? And to me, it just speaks the truth of this.
Was I there that day?
I didn't see you.
Okay, good. All right, I keep rocking with this. I want to be this guy. Yeah.
I slipped out of my seat so you wouldn't see
it. Yeah.
Cane's Chicken is a gift from the Lord.
Yeah.
Yes. It is that sauce. Yeah.
You know that euphoric feeling I was talking about earlier?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The reward. Sorry. The reward.
I love it. And I know people don't have the same physical goals that I do. And I'm not trying to put anything on anybody. But this is just an area of discipline that I think the Lord has called.
Yes.
Has called me to and that I want to be faithful to. But what I love is my buddy told me, what you feed grows and what you starve dies.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so to me, if you're finding yourself
mm-hmm.
in a rut,
mm.
in something mm-hmm. that's tough,
mm-hmm.
in a place that you don't want to be, let's say, you know, it's your marriage. Let's say it is your physical health. Let's say it's your relationship with the Lord.
Yeah.
Well, I would take a step back and say, what have I been feeding here?
Wow.
Like mm-hmm. what have I been feeding a bunch of mornings where I'm not getting up and getting in the Word? Yep. Have I been feeding just mediocrity in my time with the Lord? Mm-hmm. And I would say, starve that.
Yeah.
And I would say, feed what you want to be. Mm-hmm. And then whatever you feed, that's going to grow. I mean, that's
just 101
in anything. Yep. Exactly. You go to the gym. We talked about the gym.
Yeah.
People are feeding their muscles. They're growing. They're feeding them. Mm-hmm. No one's just standing there doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. So that to me is just.
Canes.
Yeah. 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 Whatever gym that is, that's what I want to be a part of. I'll tell you.
On your way out.
Yeah. But to me, just the basic principle of if you want to be good at something and you want to see change, then you got to feed it.
Yeah.
You do.
So, it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
So is there a Bible character or passage that is a go-to for you in this that keeps you motivated?
Go for it, pal.
No, I mean, I think for me, as Truett and I did the shred, one that was awesome. So a couple of scriptures that stuck out to me was in Proverbs. It said, a man without self-control or a man without self-discipline.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to, I mean, this kind of hurts.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like a city that's broken into and left without walls.
That's correct.
And as it's I terrible. Had read that, I immediately think back to a couple times in the Old Testament when we see Joshua, you know, breaks down the walls of Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but another character that I loved was Nehemiah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I had never read Nehemiah in my life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I loved reading Nehemiah. And I was able to kind of draw back to that after reading Proverbs about having no walls and no security. Well, Nehemiah led the charge for Jerusalem to rebuild the walls.
Yes.
So good.
And kind of restore some spiritual, just a relationship with the Lord.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I saw Nehemiah as a leader, but to me, I was able to see not so much the leadership of Nehemiah, but how broken walls can lead to just such destruction and just so such hardships.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to not have self-discipline and just to accept mediocrity means that we have no walls.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah. And I think that's so powerful. It's like, you want walls, you have got to push past this mediocrity. If you want walls, because the enemy is trying to get his way in.
Yes.
And once that happens, you're good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It's going to take a lot of hard work to get out.
That's good. So those would be the two characters I was going to say.
Josh and Nehemiah. Sorry to.
Wait, no, that's awesome. I love it.
Rain on your parade.
No.
And there's more stuff that you've probably got.
That's great.
But
true. How about for you?
So I have David and Joshua were the two that I was going with. Because the thing that fired me about the story of Joshua is where it comes in the story. Because you have like the whole first five books of God from creation than assembling a nation and like bringing them out and establishing them and all this stuff. And then they, while they are a nation, but they're wandering in the wilderness, they're wandering in the wilderness because they've been disobedient. Mm. And so God's like, hey, this whole generation's going to die and there's going to be another generation that raises up and they're going to actually get led into the promised land. Mm. And so the whole generation dies and Joshua gets to be the one that leads the charge there. Mm. And he gets to say,
yeah.
I've seen what it looks like to live a life that says, hey, let's do our own thing. Mm-hmm. And he says, yeah. Not this generation. And he leads this nation in incredible ways, just like victory after victory after victory. Again, like we saw on a Sunday here recently, like the story of Achan, where one guy in this whole nation doesn't obey. And because of that, they're like, hey, no, this generation right here, we are not going to be mediocre.
We're not doing that.
We're not falling into like, do things your own way.
Mm.
And then it's like, guess what? You're dead because of this now. That's crazy.
Yeah,
you know? And it's like him leading the nation in a way of we are ruthlessly going to be obedient to God in every way possible. Mm. There's like, that fires you up to think of a nation, like millions of people being led by a guy who says, I know the Lord and I know what's ahead for me.
Yeah,
it's so awesome.
So do you have a place or a way that you recognize, I'm slipping back into it again. Do you have some indicator lights, some warning lights that you look at your own life and you can tell, man, I'm slipping? Because it's easy to get there and all of a sudden you don't realize how quickly you got there. So how do you know for you that you got there?
Yeah.
Or that you're going there?
For me, it's having a wife.
Yeah.
It's having a wife. And I say that on for two separate purposes. One, she's going to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome because there's nobody that I want to see the best side of me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And it's just, I remember, I mean, this hasn't been much, it wasn't long ago that she, you know, I'll just say it this way. She has to do it on multiple occasions.
Mm.
And it's beautiful because we are one and she knows me and she even dropped this line on me not long ago. She was like, listen, the way that you're acting is a little bit different. And I know that you don't see it, but I want you to know that right now I know you better than you know yourself.
Wow.
And I said, whoa.
Wow.
Relax. Like,
yeah.
Relax.
Take a step back. All right.
Yeah. We're going to process for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for me, I know that that's kind of a joking answer, but it's true.
Yeah.
You know, having somebody, Truett talked about accountability, you know, having that accountability, there's no one better in my life at that than my wife.
Oh, that's great.
So good.
It's good. Truett, indicator for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you were saying, it's in the routines of life, you can get mediocre, and it's in the things that you just do continually, and you maybe at one point are like striving with excellence, and then eventually you're like, is this worth all the work that I'm putting in? And it just kind of slows down until like you look around and you're like, boy, the outcomes are just not even the same at all. You know, I like, again, thinking career-wise with youth and all this stuff, I'm like, man, people used to come here to do like more activities and all this stuff. And like, how come people have, you know, how come people aren't showing up as early and whatever? And it's like, oh, well, we've stopped doing that. We've stopped caring as much about this aspect of cultivating this in our youth ministry.
Mm.
And so it's like in the things that are the routines or even again, like you can talk about like reading your Bible or praying and all this kind of stuff, the things that are routine, they just like, why, you know, you look around, you're like, man, why does this not happen anymore? And you're like, duh, like my routines have all changed, you know, and I haven't been faithful to be diligent in like working with my heart toward these things rather than just like I'm doing these, you know.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I experience as an indicator light for me is I start having a negative attitude towards stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it starts to be just it's symptomatic of the whole area of my life. Doesn't matter which area it is. Every one of them I look at and I kind of have a negative spin on what's happening there and here. And then I can tell I've slipped at that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's time to get back to where I was. So, but man, when you're in the discipline, when you're in the groove, there's something that's just, I don't know, for me, I'll ask you guys the question of this, if this is not true for you. Isn't there a sense we just feel like, I'm on my 100%. Game right now. I'm close to God. I feel like I'm alive, right? Is that true for you guys?
Oh, absolutely.
You're in it?
Yeah, I think it's 100% true. And I think that's what, I think that's how it's intended to be,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, mm-hmm. and I think that's, you know, when we're doing the right things,
yep.
And we are following the Lord closely, like that feels really good.
Yeah. Not that we're led by feelings, but
right.
no. there's something about that that it's, yeah. it, the clicks, you know, all yeah. of a sudden the engine's hitting on all cylinders, you yeah. know, yeah. it's tuned finally and
yeah.
it's working.
100%. And then I think that's also what allows us, you know, to slip back into that entropy is because, you know, now we think, oh, we can just like, write it.
Yeah,
we can
just,
oh,
I accomplished it.
I feel great, rock. Like you're saying, like I feel great.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to write it.
Yeah, right.
And there's then no need you to just stop kind of fall back into
have the
patterns.
Oil changed and get new gas and change some filters.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, the other day there was someone had come to mind that I was like, oh man, I should text them. And then I didn't. And then the next day came and they came around again. I was like, okay, I'm just texting. Mm. You know, I'll just like reach out to this person. I invited them to a thing we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, they're probably not going to respond. I don't even know why I'm doing this. I don't really know that person that well, but I'm going to text them. I text them. They responded in like 4 seconds. And they were like very excited about this thing I had texted them about. I was like, wow, that's crazy. Yeah. I had told Chloe that happened. And she was like, wow, that's so awesome. And this was during the month of the shred. And you know, like other things have been happening, whatever. And Chloe said something like, man, it just seems like, you're hearing from God so much right now. Like, this is like the third thing you're saying. I was just like, let's go. This is the coolest thing ever. It wasn't just me that said it, but it's someone else. I'm just like, I'm freaking riding this wave for the longest time. It's like that right there was like, I'm doing the right thing and this is good and I'm growing and I'm changing and all this. I was like, this is awesome. You know, it's like that whole feeling, like everything you understand. So you just want to be like, give me more of that right there because that is awesome. You know?
It's true. It's true in marriage, you know, when Heather and I are communicating and we're active together and there's openness and we're partnering together and
in
working in what God has in front of us.
Yeah.
You're riding the wave at that
just
moment.
Like, this is unbeatable.
And it's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah.
So,
it's so good.
All right. So let's wrap it up with this. What do you say to the person who's tried? They tried the discipline and they couldn't sustain it. They've tried and they've messed up. What do you tell them?
Go for it, pal.
Yeah. man, that's, yeah.
That's tough.
The first thing that I would say is
your line from earlier, your phone background.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the person who makes mistakes is the person who never, or a person who makes mistakes.
No mistakes.
No mistakes. Yeah. Is the person who never tries anything around.
Wow.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like how awesome is it for you to just keep going?
Mm. Yeah.
But what I'm always reminded of is something that the Lord's been put on my heart recently is the story of two disciples going up to Jesus and saying, Jesus, we want to be great.
Yeah.
I want to be great.
So good.
And I love that Jesus does not condemn their desire for greatness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He says, hey, you got it all wrong.
Mm. Yeah.
And I love what he says. And he just talks about service.
Yeah.
And to me, there's no better way to start. I mean, serving other people is so out of the ordinary nowadays that it is a discipline within itself to seek out opportunities to serve. Mm-hmm. So I would say if you're struggling at the gym, you're struggling with your nutrition, you're struggling in the word, you're struggling, you know, here and here and here, I would say, one, please like start small, like give yourself some good, easy wins, but remember what the Lord sees as greatness, and that's just service for him.
Yeah.
So I would say that's a cool place to start disciplining yourself is to go out of your way for other people and to serve.
So good.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything on top of that that you guys have.
I'm sure.
I mean, I was just going to say the idea of like, you got to recenter yourself on truth. Like odds are if you're in this situation where you're like, dude, I've blown it. I'm gone. There's no way I could get back on the horse, basically. It's just way more comfortable over here. And I'm like, that's not what God's called you to, you know? That's like from everything we've explained and read about here today is like, God desires you to do great, great, great things, not just to breathe, you know? It's like your life is more than just literally consuming air on this earth, you know? You got like do something, be something for your family, for those around you, for your church and all this stuff. So it's like, that's got to be the recentering on truth. If you don't have that of like, I have purpose in this life, I mean, you're done. You're going to go nowhere, you know, like Yeah. That's what I'd say.
The thing I guess I would add, and those are great. I think this little package here is helpful for people, is mm-hmm. that feeling of guilt and shame that you feel right there, that's what Jesus came to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what he came to take away. And so don't let that keep you from going back to him, because that's what he came to free you from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's good. We talk often here about a song from the 80s that Morgan Cryer sang. And it's about someone who is, they've failed again, and they come back to the Lord and they're repenting of the sin that they've already asked forgiveness of, you know, 30 other times. But they keep bringing it back up. And the song says that they ask the Lord about their sin, and he says to them, "What sin?" And yeah. I think that's so true for us. Sometimes we let that repetitive guilt from the past keep us from moving forward, yeah. when Jesus is saying, I paid for that.
Yeah.
That's been removed. You're forgiven. And I love what you said, Jackson, about your wife, because it's true what Jesus does for us. Because he looks at us and says, look, you are so much more than what you think you are right now. In fact, I've already declared you righteous. I've mm-hmm. already declared you holy. I've already declared you blameless. So I'm asking you to live as I've already declared you.
Yeah.
Stop trying to earn this, but because I've already declared it and call you this, this is your identity, you can do this. You yeah. can do more than you think you can. So
love it.
Man. Thanks so much, Jackson, for good words yeah. today. I know this is out of a real place in your life, and
yeah.
it's real for us as well. It shows yeah. up differently. It's not standing at the plate, but it's yeah. it's standing in front of a podium sometimes mm-hmm. for us. So yeah. I appreciate both of you and what God's teaching all of us in this yeah. moment. So, all right. Thanks for joining us today. Keep lifting him up and living him out.